Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. I appreciate you spending some time. Happy Friday from the Mike Broomhead Show. Valley Economist weighing in. Yesterday, we talked about a story, became a big story here in the Valley. Four areas of the country that Goldman Sachs believes are going to suffer significant losses in real estate value coming up this year. They believe that these four markets are going to see an increase, and we have seen a bit of an increase in value here. And then they're going to see what could be, as they said, 2009 level drops in the value of real estate. Now, these four markets, two of them in California, Northern California and San Jose, Southern California and San Diego, Austin, Texas, and Phoenix, Arizona. So it's a great, a very well-written story at KTAR.com, written by Kevin Stone, regarding this. We KTAR News talked to a couple of local economists. One of them, Jim Rounds, said, we're going to continue to have growth. We're doing a great job adding employment opportunities. So ignore the report for now and expect home prices to come down a little bit more slowly. Now, Danny Court, who was a senior economist with the Scottsdale-based L.A.D. Pollock and Company, said that he thinks that he's, I don't think anyone thought we were getting a good deal in 2021. What he was referring to was that he believes that we are going to see a regression in property value, possibly down to the levels that we had in 2021. It'd be more of a correction and not a crash. So nobody, at least locally, is predicting a crash in the real estate market. And so that's good news. We still continue to see very strong job numbers here in the Valley, which I think is terrific. We are seeing some bad news in the American economy nationally. Americans falling behind in car payments at a higher rate than 2009. Bed Bath & Beyond says banks have cut off their credit lines. That's tough. I mean, that's, you know, that business is really hurting. Jobless claims fall, pointing to a still tight labor market. And consumer spending and inflation data is due. And we're going to find out more about the direction of the economy. I've said before, I meant it very sincerely. I still mean it now. The president of the United States has been wrong. He has been wrong with his administration and what they've said about inflation from the beginning. But that doesn't mean that I want them to remain long wrong. When they say that they are, the now prediction from the White House says that there may be a slight recession, but nothing major, and it's going to be overcome very quickly. I hope they're right about that. I hope that there is a soft landing when it comes to the economy. But here is a couple of things I want you to hear, and this is the these are the things that concern me. And it all has to do with policy and ideology. It isn't about personality. It isn't about any of those things. So I want you to hear, this is President Biden talking about a Republican plan and taxes.
The reason they want to do that, they want to eliminate the income tax system. Because guess what? That's the only way that millionaires and billionaires have to pay any taxes.
And that sinister voice of his, that's absolutely absurd. That's the only way millionaires and billionaires pay any taxes. I'm going to tell you a story that I found hilarious when I got older. When I was a very little boy, before I moved to Florida, I was still living in Northeast Ohio in a little town called Newberry. It was farm community back then. It sounds a lot like Mayberry. It was a lot like Mayberry. And I was a very little boy. My grandfather, my mother's father, who is my absolute hero, taught me everything I needed to know about being a man before he died when I turned nine. He was John Wayne to me. The guy was amazing. And he used to work on neighbors' cars because he was a retired mechanic, could fix or build anything. And I remember standing in the garage as I was full, maybe 4 years old, and handing my grandfather tools as he worked in the garage on cars. And he said to me, you better learn how to fix cars yourself, because by the time you get old enough to buy a car, they're going to be $5,000. Now, I want you to think about that. I paid more than $5,000 in taxes, I think, on the last car I bought. I could be wrong, but I paid a lot of money in taxes. Now, I am not a millionaire or a billionaire, but I guarantee you, millionaires and billionaires pay a lot of taxes that are not income taxes, just like everyone else does. And they pay a lot more in taxes because they buy higher ticket items. And so it's hilarious that the president makes that statement. And what's interesting is this is the president. This is what bothers me about this whole argument, this whole conversation. The president of the United States has spent the better part of 50 years in the United States government, most of that as a United States senator, writing and revising the very tax laws that we're talking about that they hate, that give loopholes to not just Republican rich people, but Democrat rich people. It's one of the things that enrages me. One of the reasons why you don't see a revision of the tax codes and you never see those loopholes taken away is because rich Democrats take advantage of them as well. It's legal. They are legally paying as little as they can in taxes. But the only ones he goes after are the rich Republicans that take advantage of the system that he helped write over 50 years. So now you've got a group of people that want to scrap it and do something else, and they are the evil ones. This is what bothers me. It's not party. It's ideology. It's an absurd thing for someone that spent all of those years creating the tax code, revising the tax code to make it what we have today, to complain about that tax code and the people that take advantage of it in the other political party. As if Democrats that are wealthy, I guarantee you, Michael Moore, the very wealthy, very liberal Democrat from Michigan and documentarian, I guarantee you he hires accountants to pay his taxes, that he has his businesses structured so that he pays as little in taxes as possible. And you could go down the list of Hollywood elites that are multimillionaires from movie and television careers that do exactly the same thing. They're not demonized. But they do exactly the same thing. They create companies and LLCs and everything else they can. They pay accountants a lot of money to legally protect their money from overtaxation. And yet, it's the Republicans that get blamed by the president. So this is the proposed sales tax. One more comment from the president.
They want to impose a 30% national sales tax on everything from food, clothing, school supplies, housing, cars, a whole deal, 30%. The MAGA Republicans deliberately choose to inflict this kind of pain on the American people. Why? Why?
They want to inflict. Let's use the number. I'm running out of time, but let's use that number. They want to inflict that kind of pain on the American people. Yet, when this president wants a tax increase on wealthy people, you're not inflicting anything on them, are you? It's not inflicting. It's them paying their fair share. You are increasing, we are increasing this year, the minimum amount of taxes that businesses will pay, big and small businesses. Are you inflicting a tax increase on them, Mr. President? This is the kind of hypocrisy in American government. It happens on both sides of the aisle. If we want a more fair tax system, instead of it going to a national sales tax, why don't we have a flat percentage tax that everybody pays? You know, kind of like Arizona has. It's done pretty well for our coffers and the state coffers. In a moment, we had a great interview with Jennifer Meller. She is with an organization called Build Your Future Arizona, and they are helping people transition into the construction field. The numbers are staggering, but it'll be great for our economy. We're going to explain it and let you hear more from that interview next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. We all understand that there is difficulty right now in retaining good people and getting good people in a lot of different industries. I have come from the construction world. It is something that is near and dear to my heart. It fed me for a long time, and I was someone that just got lucky. But it was the same kind of an atmosphere. In the mid-1980s, if you remember the Carter era, we had such high inflation and interest rates were so high, the economy was so bad that Jimmy Carter was a one-term president. Wonderful human being. Terrible president. It ushered in Ronald Reagan. It took a long time to turn that inflationary machine around, but by the mid-80s, the economy was starting to roar again. I benefited from that. I turned 18 in 1980. As a matter of fact, I was. You want to talk about me being a typical, definite 80s kid? I turned 18 in June of 1985, middle of the year, in the middle of 1985, or in the middle of the 1980s. So in that summer, I became an apprentice electrician. I was a helper on job sites, and it led me to a career that lasted me for over two decades. And it's something that I will tell you that I will love forever. It was so good for me, not realizing as I entered it. I only took the job because it paid more money than the other job I was working. But it opened doors for me that I never imagined would be open. I became a business owner. I became a business manager. I learned a lot about life and about a lot about business, believing I was just going to do something I thought was fun. So Jennifer Meller joined us, and she is with Build Your Future Arizona. We've had them on the air before. Just some of the statistics that we talked about this morning is the numbers of jobs that are available. There's over 271,000, they call them craft professionals, are needed by December of 2024. That's how many job openings there are going to be. She talked about the opportunities of training by companies.
There's a lot of people out in the workforce that have high quality skills that are very translatable into construction careers. And because the demand is so great, many of our companies are willing to bring people on at a very entry level and train them up internally as well.
So if you or someone that you really care about is a self-starter, is a self-motivator, and there's someone that wants to be, work for themselves, so to speak, where they are given responsibility, these are great places because there is oversight on job sites. If you're a service, if you're someone that does service work like I did for a long time, service and repair, you're in a truck by yourself. Sometimes I saw my boss once a week or maybe twice a week. I'd go in on Monday, I'd pick up a stack of work orders, and I didn't see him again until I turned those work orders in and got more. And it was just a great way to make a living. But also the training. The interesting thing about this is I had a boss that paid for my schooling and for my journeyman electrician exam for everybody in our company. Now, at the time, it was a small outfit, but he wanted everyone that worked for him to be a journeyman. Paid for our books, paid for our school, paid for our test. It was an amazing experience. I've had bosses send me to classes like transient voltage surge suppression and lighting design and a bunch of other schooling that was necessary for my growth in the industry. And showing aptitude and showing desire was all that I really needed to go further. Bosses, once in these industries, once they see whether you're an estimator, you're a project manager, you're someone that works on a job site, when they see someone that is motivated to growth, they take advantage of that and they train you and they foster that skill set. So I asked her about, for people, what happens because of the lack of workers? These projects, how are they lagging because we don't have the workforce?
We know that the lack of construction jobs is delaying projects all over the valley. And you look at just the massive amount of construction that's taking place. Look at TSMC in the North Valley. That's consuming 10,000 construction jobs. We are continuing to announce every day new projects coming into the market, and it's just making it more and more competitive when it comes to our construction workforce.
Now, I can tell you that journeyman electricians and journeyman plumbers and journeyman air conditioning specialists, that there's differing degrees, but they're making 70, 75, 80,000 of them with benefits. How much can you make as an estimator? You are just someone that knows how to take off a set of blueprints, bid a job, and make sure that the contracts are done right. Now, this is not even necessarily project managers, but they are usually called estimator project managers.
Those are really great paying jobs as well. We're talking $70,000 to $80,000 for an estimator that you can make here in Arizona. And again, to your earlier point, companies will train you on how to go about estimating jobs.
Different than it was when I was doing estimating and project management, because now with the just how advanced technology is, a lot of it is done on the computers and takeoffs are done a lot differently. But it is a great way to, you're not in the field necessarily, you're not on the job site getting your hands dirty, although I love doing that part of the work. You are overseeing project, managing the money, managing what's going on, making sure they come in on time and on budget. It is really a cool way to learn this industry. So I am encouraging people, if you are a person that is a young person looking for a career, if you are somebody that feels like the career you're in or the job you're in isn't for you, and you believe you're kind of stuck because you don't have a college degree, I want you to look into this industry. And it doesn't matter which of these fields you want to go into. Build Your Future Arizona can help you. And BY, as in build your, BYF, built like build your future, BYFAZ.com. BYFAZ.com is where you can find out more information. And it is, I can just tell you from personal experience, job security. Again, barely have a high school diploma, and I worked for over 20 years in the industry until I had my own business. I never was unemployed when I wasn't choosing to be unemployed. The longest unemployment time I had was 3 days. It's when I drove from Southwest Florida to Arizona. I got here on a Monday. I applied on Tuesday, and I got hired from three different companies on Tuesday. I went to work on Wednesday. That's a true story. Nothing spectacular about me. It's just the industry will keep you employed. So I hope you look into it. Coming up in a moment, we're going to go back to the economy, so to speak, but gas and oil and electric vehicles and the future and the cost of things. What causes prices to go up? How can we affect those prices? And is the president vetoing or threatening to veto something that would keep costs high? We'll talk about it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
I appreciate you being here for a few moments. I want you to hear the President of the United States talking about, this is a recent comment about the possibility of recession.
Plenty of Wall Street analysts were saying that by the end of the year there'd be a recession. They've been telling me since I got elected they're going to be in a recession. Every time we've gone, we've gotten better. Well, it turns out, thank God, they were wrong.
Well, we haven't been wrong, and that's the issue here. The word recession is a political football. It really is. And the politics is alive and well. We are sprinting toward, even though it feels like, you know, we're almost 2 years away, but we are sprinting toward the 2024 election. Whether or not the president runs for reelection, all indications from him is that he will. There is a political, there is political capital in the word recession. I alluded to this earlier about the Carter administration. Jimmy Carter was a wonderful human being. He was a terrible president. Americans vote with their wallets. And Jimmy Carter, during his administration, again, I was nine. I don't remember the ins and outs of what happened during his administration, but I do remember people talking about it. I was raised in a family when I was a little boy, and I lived in Ohio at this time. I moved when I was 10. My uncles were Teamsters. I had an uncle that was in the Baker's Union. I had another uncle that was on the loading docks at a major trucking company called Specter Freight. They were at one time one of the three largest trucking companies in the U.S. They were union member Teamsters. And so I grew up in families that were largely working class Democrats. And I didn't know anything, nor did I care anything about politics. But Jimmy Carter made them all angry. By the time he was done, Ronald Reagan won election. Ronald Reagan, and during his administration, the economy turned around so much that in 1984, Ronald Reagan was reelected by winning 49 of 50 states. 49 of 50 states. So people vote with their wallets, and they still do. And this president is talking about not having a recession, and I think he needs to. I have maintained, and I still maintain, that everything they do is through the prism of climate change. The idea that they are not going to allow for drilling of natural gas or for oil doesn't make any sense. Here's a report from Elizabeth Schultz at ABC about how high natural gas prices are.
Customers facing serious sticker shock after home heating costs ballooned by as much as 300% in January. The city hall in Deming, a small town near El Paso, was forced into lockdown after officials started getting threats from people now forced to choose between paying for heating or growing. groceries. Meanwhile, in California, SoCalGas charging 5 times more per gas unit this month compared to January of last year. The state now promising to move up payment on natural gas credits, while L.A. County has called for the Attorney General to investigate the price hike.
So why are prices so high? She goes on in this report.
It comes as global natural gas prices are dropping, leaving many wondering why bills in the western U.S. are rising. According to a recent report from Natural Gas Intelligence, the cold snap in the west has pushed demand to historically high levels, while U.S. supply is still stunted by a 2021 pipeline explosion in Arizona.
So supply and demand, we are seeing this happening. And because of infrastructure issues, we are seeing high prices. When it comes to the price of oil, we are seeing an increase in prices because as China opens up from its shutdowns because of COVID-19, they are demanding more and more. So the United States government, and there is a bill that is going through the House of Representatives right now called the Strategic Petroleum Response Act that would open up drilling for oil and natural gas, the administration has said they would veto this. Using their power of the veto, they would veto this bill. And it doesn't make sense to me, but it does to many people. Another one that doesn't make sense is there is some land that the federal government has now taken away from the ability of being mined. And these are minerals that are necessary for the EVs and the green energy that this president is pushing us toward. So how do we control anything? If the vast majority of these minerals that we use or are going to be necessary for the EVs that we are going toward, if they are mined by China, what does that do to the national security of the United States? We learned our lesson with COVID, at least partially we did, with how much of our antibiotics and the drugs we use manufactured in China. When you look at the what's happening between Taiwan and China, and how many of the chips manufactured that are used in automobiles and jacuzzis and everything we use that's electronic, how many of those chips were manufactured in Taiwan? It's one of the reasons why you see the CHIPS Act that was passed. The fact that the chip plant that is going in a $40 billion investment in the Northwest Valley, the continued huge investment of another billions and billions of dollars by Intel in the East Valley, because the American people realize now that for national security purposes, there are just some necessities that we have to be able to manufacture here and not be dependent on in large parts in other parts of the world. That doesn't mean we're going to become isolationists. It means that there are some critical things that we need to make sure we control. Wouldn't you? And there are a lot of people out there that think the green energy initiative of this president is the direction we need to go to save the planet. I don't subscribe to that, but I'm trying to find some common ground with people. If we are going to push this nation toward EVs, why are we shutting down the possibility of mining for the minerals so that we can produce those EVs here and not rely on those or the batteries for them anyway? Why are we turning that over to the Chinese? Why are we allowing them to have the lion's share? If you look at how much of the world's production of electric vehicles, the vast majority of the production of electric vehicles is being done by China. And if we have to make a choice, we're going to drill for oil, natural gas. Are we going to mine for the materials used for the EVs we're pushing toward? I'm confused by this. And I think the world is, the people that are a lot bigger experts than I am are confused by this. I'm interested in all of this. I truly am. And I hope we go start going in the right direction. Going to go back to a story in just a moment. Yesterday, the superintendent of public instruction spoke at a subcommittee in the House of Representatives here in the state legislature, encouraging the entire legislative body to get rid of the aggregate expenditure limitation on education spending. There is a caucus, the Freedom Caucus in Arizona, is saying not so fast in a press release. I'll tell you what this means and how important it is in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Happy Friday. The golf tournament hailed as the People's Open returns to the TPC of Scottsdale. The WM Phoenix Open tees off on February 6th, runs through February 12th. You can head over to the contest page at KTAR.com to take a chance on winning some tickets. One lucky winner is going to win Greenskeeper passes. That is a cool prize. All right, before we close out this hour, it's back to education in the state of Arizona. I am a big proponent of quality education. I think we all want the exact same thing. I have had a conversation with the Speaker of the House, Ben Thoma, with the Senate President, Warren Peterson, with leadership in Senator Sonny Borelli, and they all have kind of echoed the sentiment that they believe that the aggregate expenditure limit, I'm sure you've heard of it, but the AEL was voted in 1980, and it limits the amount of spending based on the budget and based on, you know, the amount of money in the budget so that we are not overspending, and that was voted in by voters in 1980. Since it was voted in by voters, the Arizona Constitution says it can only be overridden and temporarily overridden by a two-thirds majority of the House and the Senate. So there's the basics. So we've been hearing from Republican leadership that they believe that this will get done. It was done last year. It had been last year as well that we are spending more money on education. And it is it triggered this limit. So now a press release came out. Jake Hoffman from the state senator, said the following: Arizona's children deserve the highest quality education America has to offer. Now, I agree with that statement, and I think both sides of this argument agree with that statement. Now, he goes on to say, sadly, they're receiving far from it at the hands of government-run school districts. At a time when the Republican-controlled legislature is appropriating historically high education funding, test scores continue to plummet. In the latest publicly available data, only 28% of Arizona 8th graders are proficient in reading. And only 32% of 11th graders were able to pass the state math assessment. Adding insult to injury, these catastrophic failures of government school districts are disproportionately hurting low-income, minority, and middle-class Arizonans. I don't disagree with that statement. So they say that they do not want to vote. They will not give as a body. Unanimously, they say we are not going to vote to override this unless it accompanies systemic reforms that benefit students, families, and teachers. I want to give you a couple of examples. Now, this is a national story that I happened to see this morning, and I did not know they were talking about anybody from Arizona when I saw the headline. Obama honored superintendent blasts white race as problematic who should feel really uncomfortable. First line of the story: a superintendent in Arizona, previously honored by the Obama White House for being a champion of change, blasted the white race as problematic and said they should feel really, really uncomfortable in an unearthed media interview uncovered. The superintendent of the Scottsdale Unified School District, Scott Menzel, discussed equity, inclusion, and social justice in an interview while working in the same position in Michigan. Now, he was hired here in Arizona in 2020. Now, I don't know him. I didn't know anything about him. I knew the board president was in a bunch of trouble because the Scottsdale Unified School District was doxing parents that disagreed with them. But I want to use this as a launching point for a moment. By the way, he's Caucasian, and for the purposes of this conversation, it's important because he's talking about race. And some of the quotes from the interview: there is a misconception that educational equity is really only for ethnically and racially diverse districts, but white people have racial identities as well, and in fact, problematic racial identity that we typically avoid. He said the system needed to be dismantled to create a system of racial equity, and that privilege needed to be called out. I will say to you that I don't think you're going to meet anyone that despises racism as much as I do. I hate it. I think it is the lowest form of judgment to just take a look at somebody. It's bad enough by the color of their hair, tattoos that they have, piercings, but the color of their skin to make judgments about who they are and the quality of life they're entitled to is a horrible thing. In Arizona, the statistics put forth by Senator Hoffman are accurate, that we are not educating our children in the very basics. You want them to figure out how to fix the problems, teach them how to learn. in Scottsdale, this is who leadership is. Now, you may agree with what leadership is saying, but many parents don't. And many parents want a superintendent that is focused on making sure the children in that district are reading at grade level, performing math skills and passing the assessment, and becoming educated students that are ready for the next phase of their lives when they leave K through 12 education. These are the issues that are real, legitimate issues being brought up by people, whether it's the superintendent calling them distractions or it's parents going in and saying, we don't want this in our school districts. But you can't argue the point that the school districts, the way they're being run in many areas, are failing to meet the grades necessary for these children to flourish. That's where the biggest problem comes in. We can continue to fight with each other. You can call me or other people racist for questioning this tactic. But what you can't question is the failure of focus by leadership and education. So when the Freedom Caucus in Arizona is going to take a lot of heat for this because they're playing politics with education. But what they're talking about is, let's look at the system and figure out, we're throwing more money at it, we're billions of dollars, we've triggered this expenditure limit. Let's take a look now before we throw the money at the problem anymore. Let's look at the system and see where the system needs to be fixed. That doesn't sound unreasonable, especially when we know the system isn't working. So we're going to try to get Senator Hoffman on the air early next week to talk about this. I think it should be an interesting conversation. Coming up after just after 11 o'clock, an Arizona 13-year-old is arrested for bringing a gun to school. We'll talk about guns. We'll talk about gun safety next.